We're going to be receiving, we're going to get an update on Platform Holly and also Piers 421. So this is something that's important to the whole community and to the city. And so I thank you for being here. I especially want to thank State Lands Commissioners for being here. They made a commitment a while back to keep us informed and be transparent about everything that's going on, and they have definitely done that. So I thank them so much for that. I want to acknowledge a few council members in the audience. Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan is here with us, and Council Member Elect James Carriaco is here. So he'll be taking office in December 4th. So thank you all again for being here, and I'm going to turn this over to them because this is their town hall meeting, and I know that's who you want to hear from. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor, the City Council, and city staff. My name is Jennifer Lucchesi. I'm the Executive Officer of the California State Lands Commission. This is Seth Blackman. He is our Senior Staff Counsel, co-lead on the decommissioning project, and Jeff Plank, one of our senior engineers, former assistant chief of our Mineral Resources Management Division, and he came back especially out of retirement to help us with this project. So we're internally grateful for that. I just want to really thank the city for hosting us tonight. It's always such a great venue to host this town hall here, and they provide all the snacks and the water and are just very welcoming. So we're grateful for that. And then also to all of you for being here tonight and spending time with us learning about what we're doing. So thank you. So without further ado, tonight, we're going to be primarily focusing on technical updates on the work that we're doing specifically at Piers 421, the two shore zone piers. We'll also provide an update on what we've been doing out at Platform Holly, and of course, a status update on our work at the EOF. We'll also talk a little bit about the coordination with local and state agencies and talk about next steps and what the future will hold. I think though the real kind of the primary element that we will be talking about tonight is Piers 421. We have been making significant progress getting those piers ready to be plugged and abandoned and ultimately decommissioned, and we're excited. We're going to actually start that work pretty soon, so I'll let Jeff talk about that. I just want to remind everybody about what our project goal here is, and that is the to plug and abandon the 30 wells at Platform Holly and the two wells at Piers 421, and the final disposition of the platform and Piers 421 infrastructure, consistent with the CEQA analysis, consistent with what we hear from the community about what your desires and needs are, and of course, what's in the best interest of the state. This is has been. We've been at this for about a year and a half now. We have many years to come to get to that final disposition of Platform Holly and the infrastructure associated with it. But our commitment remains strong and actually gets stronger by the day because of the progress that we're making. And we're excited to share that with you tonight. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, just to remind everybody, if you didn't know where these things were, Platform Holly sitting out there in the water, and Piers 421, number one and number two, are just to the southeast of the EOF, which is up there in the left corner. This was a great picture that I got from Ann Wells. I thought I'd use it tonight. It's the best picture we got of them. When I'm talking about well number one, that's the one to the left here, the first one you get to when you walk on the beach coming from the Bacaro. And then well number two is the one down at the end of the road that we have to access these two. Well number one was shut in ages ago and became a water injector well for a number of years before it was shut in 93, I think. Well number two was a producer, and we actually worked on both of these wells and some of the retaining walls and the caissons back in 2000 and 2001. And they've been shut in ever since. So going through some of the repairs that we had to do, we had the road had become overgrown with vegetation. What we had to do was cut the vegetation back to the original 12-foot road width, and we installed 3 French drains, which, if you know, is just cutting, making a cut and adding gravel to 3 areas that significantly drain from the golf course. I guess I was the only one that thought, we might get these wells plugged and abandoned before the winter season. That's not the case, naturally, since we've already started into that season. And with the possibility of El Nino this year, we went ahead and graveled the entire road. I was out there today. It's nice and compact. We drove on it. It's great. The timbers on each one of these wells has a pier or a causeway that goes from the access road to the caisson, and the boards, the timbers on the number one well, most of them had to be replaced just from dry rot and whatnot. That's been accomplished as well. Matter of fact, just last week. And we now feel very confident that the road and causeways are sufficient to handle the loads of the equipment we need to use to do the actual plugging and abandonment. I always like to see pictures. So the picture on the left was actually a picture of the road out to the wells before we cut back the vegetation, and that was one of the drainage areas as well. And the after picture is pretty much what it looked like today when I was out there. So we have a nice road that can handle the equipment and won't get bogged down in mud. The repair of the causeways, it's a little hard to see, but the one on the left, there's a lot of orange spray paint on it. All those timbers had to be replaced. The middle one shows some of the action that was going on while we were replacing them. They put a tarp underneath each one of the causeways under the area they were working in so nothing would get on the beach. And the picture on the right is kind of like, that's what they look like now. In October, we being everyone associated with the abandonment process, the plugging and abandonment, which is at this point us, Beacon West, who's our contractor for all of this work, and ExxonMobil, had a risk assessment workshop. These are workshops that are done with people involved, and we go through all of the potential risks that may come up just to make sure that we've looked at everything for personnel safety and for safety of the public and the environment. Once we took 2 days and went through every aspect of that, most of the risks were very unlikely. Matter of fact, all of them were very unlikely. But the action items that came out of that was, I'm thinking it was about 24, maybe 30. And if you've been out on the beach or in that area this week, you've seen a lot of work going on both of these piers. And what that is we're working through that list, making sure that everything is all the items and everything that we've come up with mitigations for are being attended to, and to mainly ensure a safe project, especially for the public. So the plugging and abandonment. We've completed the programs. Actually, this would be the second update that we've had of the actual work to plug and abandon. The wells themselves, from our initial ideas of how we're going to do it to what they are now, changed a little bit over the course of the last couple of months because of just factors with pressures and the wellhead and some of the things that we've been seeing. We should be presenting those to the Division of Oil and Gas and to our own engineering staff here over the next week or two. And pending the satisfactory completion of our diagnostics, which is all the work we're doing out there right now, hopefully we'll get the plugging and abandonment process. You'll actually see a rig out there by the end of December, and if everything goes well, it'll take about anywhere from 10 to 15 days per well, so we should be done by the end of January, weather permitting. Interestingly enough, we had maybe 1 foot surf today. I'm standing on pier number two, and even at 1 foot surf, the spray was coming over the top of the caisson. It's even worse at well number two, actually, because it doesn't have a lip on the end of the case at the top of the caisson. If we start seeing El Nino type weather where we may get, you know, 10, 12, maybe 15 foot surf, the work's going to have to stop until that passes. So we're still hopeful that we can get this done by the end of January. And for all of you that have lived here long enough, you know the worst months for the El Ninos are generally February and March. At least that's when the best snow comes in. The only thing I wanted to bring up tonight, too, and we're still talking with the Coastal Commission about it, there's going to be equipment all the way from where the wellhead is, which is out there towards the end of that caisson that sticks out in the water, onto the piers and causeway, and even a little bit onto the road. All of this work, all of this equipment is heavy, and some of it will be high pressure. All of it's major construction equipment. The rig itself, a little bit over 100 feet tall, okay? So in order for the best public protection, we're asking for a perimeter, if you will, a work perimeter around the wells we're working on of about 150 feet. That will extend to 300 feet once or twice during the process of each well, and that's for a special activity that we do. And we can't have any radio waves because it could accidentally set off a charge. So occasionally we want to expand that 300 feet just to make sure that everybody on the rig is safe and the public is safe. Like I said, the work is only going to take maybe 10 to 15 days. So these are going to be short-lived inconveniences, if you will. During daylight hours, around whichever well we happen to be working on, we'll start with well number one, and we'll start with well number one, and then we'll move down the road to well number two. And with that, So the final things I wanted to leave you with on the 421, that it's important to note that these perimeters I was just talking about is for your safety. The security and safety plans are in place, and it is to ensure the safety not only of our workers, but also you, the public, and the environment. Once the plugging and abandonment of the wells is done, the wells will be in a safe and dormant condition. However, the caissons, the big things that are around them, the concrete structures and the piers will remain until we have the CEQA information done and contractors are hired to come in and take those out. The earliest, probably next fall or sometime after that. That's my best guess, and I've been a bad guesser so far, but that's my best guess. So. You want to wait for questions at the end?
We can wait for questions at the end.
Okay. On the platform, Holly, this is a rather new picture, and I'll tell you why before. That little thing over there in the right corner is interesting. Okay, so I think this is our third town hall meeting. Since last town hall meeting, we did the slick line campaign, which I talked about. It gave us a lot of good downhole information. The drilling rig and the ancillary equipment's been surveyed by the contractor that Exxon has hired. A mobile crane was added to the platform specifically to put in the new office buildings. There's six new buildings going out on the platform. That's going on as we speak. The first two were put in about 3 weeks ago, and they're fully commissioned and in operation today. Two more were put in just last week, and the last two will probably be going in sometime the beginning of December. We have to move the entire drilling rig over to one side of the platform so we can move that bullfrog crane over to do the demolition of the last two buildings and to set the two new ones in place.
Jack, can you remind people why the modules had to be replaced?
Oh, sure. Matter of fact, the modules themselves were condemned. And you'll see why here in a minute. I'll get to that. The pictures show more than I can explain it. Whoops. So for 6 weeks over the summer, until we started putting the new modules in, the drilling rig and all the equipment associated with that drilling rig was surveyed and found for the most part to be either unusable or inoperable. Requiring either repair, replacement, or refurbishment. And basically, we needed to rebuild the rig and all the auxiliary equipment in order to have a plugging and abandonment operation. After the 6 weeks and the demolition of removing the equipment for repair, a shopping list basically for all the new or the equipment that's going to be repaired was acquired, and that is being executed between now and probably mid-January. The repairs, assuming that everything continues on schedule, we're a little bit ahead of schedule on putting the new office buildings out there. The repairs of the actual drilling rig, which will do the work to do the plugging and abandonment, should take about 3 to 4 months, and it should start about mid-January. Risk assessment workshops for Holly will probably start next month. Give an idea what a bullfrog crane looks like. Prior to placing the buildings, we had to put that smaller one in the circle on the pedestal crane, which is the main crane out there at the at the platform. Couldn't reach all the way over and do what we needed it to do, which is the reason we had to bring in an auxiliary crane. So this is pretty much why we needed to do this. The picture on the left is what the condemned buildings, that was the galley and the medical center and a few, and where we kept the air for the oxygen, because it's an H2S environment. Can you touch that one on the right? I wanted to give you guys a flavor for some of the work, that what it looks like. This is putting the first module in place using the bullfrog crane.
It's like that little.
What they did is they set that one down, they brought another one in and tied it to the top of that, and then they used hydraulic movers to move to slide it back in underneath the deck there. Okay, so what I was saying, that first picture is down there on the left, circled in red, and the top one is what it replaced. The other four are basically behind that circular can that's on the boat, but the other four modules are over behind the drilling rig, the mast. Okay. Onshore, the Elwood Onshore facility, we are 90% done with testing all of the equipment and have done most of the replacement and repairs. There's still some stuff on what they call, there's an oil side and a gas side. There's still some stuff on the gas side that's being reviewed and tested. Most of the oil side has all been tested and is in good shape. So that's about the technical update.
So I'll quickly run through. We continue to work very closely with the city and the county, City of Goleta and the County of Santa Barbara, and the Santa Barbara County Air Pollution Control District, and all of our sister state and federal agencies, both just keeping them in the loop on what we're doing, as well as ensuring that we're complying with all of their rules and regulations as we move forward. So that coordination and collaboration continues on, and will continue to until we're finished with all of this. And so this slide is really showing kind of what happens at the end when we're all done plugging and abandoning the total of 32 wells. And of course, that will entail, once we get everything into a safe condition, and there is no more risk of an oil spill or any other kind of a release of a product, we will fully engaged in the analysis and community engagement on what's going to happen with the platform and the related infrastructure. And as we've stated since the beginning, we understand that the final disposition of the infrastructure is of critical importance to the community and to the state. And so we will be engaging in very broad, comprehensive, and meaningful community and stakeholder engagement. We will, of course, be doing an EIR and complying with CEQA, including all of the public noticing requirements associated with that. And there is still the issue of funding the ultimate decommissioning. So that'll be a state budget process that we'll have to engage in at the appropriate time. We are still working on the final disposition of the Elwood Onshore facility. Seth can get into this in in more detail, but to summarize, the Venico bankruptcy trustee filed an inverse condemnation action against the state and the State Lands Commission in bankruptcy court, and we are currently fighting that. We filed a couple of motions today that are now currently on our website that give a good summary of the state's position in regards to that inverse condemnation action. I think the important takeaway and what's going on with the EOF is the State Lands Commission has absolutely no intention of leaving the EOF, they will have to drag us out physically. We are committed to ensuring the safety of that facility, as well as the safety of Platform Holly and Piers 421, and obviously they are an integral unit to each other. And we will continue to abate this ongoing emergency, and we're committed to doing that. So there is a significant legal fight happening in Delaware right now, but I can assure you that we're putting the resources we need to be able to prevail there. And I think that probably ends our final our formal presentation. We do want to open it up to comments and questions, and we'll answer them as openly as we can. The one thing I just want to summarize here is over the past year and a half, we've been working on a number of different levels, both in terms of on a legal level, working the bankruptcy proceedings to ensure that the state and the community is protected. We've also been, as Jeff was explaining, doing a lot of work out at the platform, Piers 421, and the EOF, essentially doing a significant amount of repairs and prepping the facilities in order to start plugging and abandonment. So it's been a long lead up to what really is what matters, and that's getting these wells into a safe condition. And we're at the brink of starting to do that. So it is a really exciting time for us because we can actually see a little light at the end of the tunnel in terms of fulfilling our commitment to the state and to the community of making these operations safe and getting them prepared for the ultimate decommissioning. So with that, I'll turn it over to questions or comments, and please just feel free to come on up to the podium. That would be great.
I've never been known to be shy, and I'm the first name on the list. My name is Barbara Massey, and I know there are a lot of really important issues to people in general, but those of us who live in the western end of Goleta are very concerned about the fact that we still do not have an off-site hydrogen sulfide monitor, and I wonder what's happening with that. Thank you.
Barbara, thanks for joining us. Right now, you know, we've worked with APCD on the continuation of other monitoring as it relates to the West Campus monitoring station, so that's being maintained. I know that in our conversations with Goleta City Council and other members of the team, including APCD, they are still looking into, and we've again been willing to contribute time and energy on trying to find viable mobile sources that the city and that APCD can invest in. So I think that's still ongoing. I haven't heard a final resolution to that, but it is something that kind of the parties are collectively working on. So that's there. Obviously, all of the other monitoring stations associated with the EOF and Holly are still being maintained. And so that's kind of where that stands right now. It's not fully resolved in terms of how APCD and or the city may seek to find some additional monitoring capabilities, but I think everybody's looking into it kind of collectively. And while folks are coming up, I'll just add one clarification to the last slide that was up there. The decommissioning of Platform Holly will be completed by or paid for by ExxonMobil. That is something that I'm currently in the process of working through the final phases of the negotiation and the final write-up with ExxonMobil, but the firm commitment has already been made. For those who are interested, they're on our website under the information tab under Platform Holly and Venico bankruptcy. The phase one agreement with ExxonMobil is present, so folks who are interested and want to look at it, you're welcome to do so. It's out there. It breaks down the plug and abandonment obligations. That's our phase one because we want to get through the health and safety issues. We're doing an interim agreement right now because we weren't sure we were going to be able to get to the decommissioning of the 421 piers and caissons, the infrastructure, as early as we actually may be able to. Like Jeff said, it'll probably be this next calendar year, and it'll be based on appropriate work windows. So we'll have to get past some of the summer and into the next possible work window once the plug and abandonment is done. But we're working with Exxon right now to get that done. So the decommissioning of the infrastructure out offshore, the beach, you know, adjacent to Sandpiper Golf Course, like I said, could start and be completed this next calendar year, which is pretty exciting. So we're working on that. And when the final version of that is done, that'll also be up on our website. And I expect the phase two elements, which require us to scope the decommissioning, at least initially from an engineering perspective. We've already engaged with Exxon on this. They're starting that process. We've already started looking at the kind of the monetary aspects, big picture. That's consistent with, I think I've mentioned here before, the claim that was placed in the Venico bankruptcy, where you have this total cost of about $350 million. It's the kind of the potential total maximum costs that could be incurred for from the beginning of where we are now all the way through the end of decommissioning. So that's all covered as part of the larger agreement. Exxon has committed to that. Like I said, we just have to kind of get the pieces on paper. But for their management and for everything else, we broke this into smaller pieces. But I think that's really helpful. We don't necessarily have to, at this point, we're not anticipating a significant return to the California tax base or the budget process to necessarily augment for decommissioning. We are, based on our original assessment, we should fall within the range that we asked for, which was the 58, well, there was a $108.5 million appropriation between Holly and Rincon Island. And I think we'll actually be within that. And again, largely that's because Exxon has come in and fulfilled its responsibilities and will be fulfilling its responsibilities towards and through decommissioning. So that's an important note because it is a liability that the state could have been kind of straddled with, but that ExxonMobil has stepped in and is working on actively right now, and I'm working with their in-house and outside counsels. So I think that's just an important clarification. And as Jeff said, on the technical side, the work with ExxonMobil, Beacon West, and our staff from an engineering and risk assessment side has been, I think, accelerating and really moving forward in a way that, that is starting to get to the point where it's no longer sort of theoretical what we're doing for the decommissioning and for the plug and abandonment. We've gotten past those stages, and now we're working through the actual kind of detail work that we need to do so we can start plug and abandonment.
Thank you and good evening. I'm Linda Kropp, Chief Counsel of the Environmental Defense Center. And when we had the first town hall meeting, I had a lot to say. I'm mainly here tonight to say thank you. We've been monitoring this very closely, as you know, and meeting with you all over the year and a half. And it's amazing the progress that has been made in terms of repairs on the platform, moving forward on the piers, getting the onshore infrastructure in place. I mean, it ended up being a bigger project than I think even you or we anticipated. So I want to thank you for being on top of all that, for managing and operating the EOF, for standing up to Venico. And I also am very pleased to hear about the agreement with Exxon. That's been something that, you know, we've been hoping for, and I think the State Lands Commission had the foresight when Mobil transferred the lease to Venico. The agreement between Mobil and Venico did not retain liability with Mobil, but the State Lands Commission, as the authority that had to approve that transfer, made sure that Exxon, or Mobil at the time, Exxon Mobil, now retained the liability, and now we're seeing that how important that was. I don't think anyone at that point anticipated that Venico would go bankrupt. So thankfully, the commission had the foresight to do that. And thank you. Keep us posted.
Good evening, I'm Mark Chitillo, and I'm here on behalf of the Gavioto Coast Conservancy. It's an organization that's very appreciative as well of the work that you're doing to help restore the pristine Gavioto Coast to what it could be, what it has been and what it could be. I'll join Linda in our appreciations for all the work and the minutia and the work that EDC has been doing in this whole process is, I think, really benefiting the community. I wanted to add one comment with respect to the mitigation. One of the things that's really important to our community is our access to our beaches. And necessarily part of the project for the abandonment of 421 will be a closure of the beaches. And so I wanted to offer a suggestion for a mitigation measure. A goal of our community has been to establish the coastal trail throughout the Gaviota Coast, and there have been portions of it that have been completed through the adjoining properties to the Sandpiper Golf Course, which is immediately onshore from where the 421 leases are. And one of the things that could mitigate the impact of the beach closures and benefit the community through this process would be to create an easement through whatever methods might be available to you or could be accomplished, so that we could have the completion of the coastal trail through this stretch of our coast. The Sandpiper Golf Course is the section that doesn't have a trail through it. To the east, to the west, we do have those trail corridors. And so as you're looking at this solution, obviously when you go through your CEQA process for the abandonment, there's going to be many other opportunities for dealing with the environmental impacts and mitigation strategies. But in the interim, as you're dealing with the 421 issues and beach closures, that's something that I think our community would very much like to see. So I wanted to offer that, and again, offer our thanks for your good work and foresight in dealing with these issues. Thank you.
I was preparing my speech. thank you very much for coming here. So what I want to find out is the projected impact to the local region caused by climate change decreases water quality, also groundwater and coastal water. I also want you to please address the sea level rises, the clean in aquatic ecosystem health, and also the impact on the fisheries in the area. Another thing that is on the final EIR of the revised PRC 421, it states that in October 2006, water from the caisson detected arsenic, mercury, and selenium. I would please ask you to test for these metals again and give us the levels, because they are not healthy for the individuals that are working on the beach and for the people that are living around there. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, what water was tested?
Arsenic, mercury, and selenium.
In the caisson. When was that done?
2006.
Okay. So we will be, as part of the decommissioning of the piers, we will be conducting, developing an addendum mm-hmm. to the Piers 421 EIR that was certified by the commission a couple of years ago. And so that will be an opportunity for us to analyze the removal of the second pier, as well as an opportunity for the members of the public and stakeholders to comment on our environmental analysis, as well as any mitigation measures that may be necessary as part of that additional CEQA work. So I encourage you all to keep an eye out on that and comment as appropriate. Katie Davis.
Hello, I'm Katie Davis. I'm chair of the Santa Barbara Sierra Club, but I've lived here in the Goleta region for 17 years, so long time. And I want to thank you for coming to town and giving us these updates, and really appreciate all the work you've done on addressing these legacy wells and decommissioning the Venego properties and jumping on it when they went bankrupt, and just really appreciative. I do have sort of a related question, since you're partnering with Exxon, and because it is, you know, less expensive the more platforms you decommission at a time, the cheaper it is. as you know, the Exxon's platforms have also been shut down since the Plains Pipeline oil spill that caused Venico's bankruptcy. And if there is any way we can encourage them to just decommission those early too, they have an application now to restart those wells and truck the oil, 70 truckloads a day, turning around at Refugio State Beach and going up the 101 Gaviota Pass, windy 166, like the most dangerous way to transport oil. Plains also has an application to build a whole new pipeline, 123 miles along the same route over three rivers. And presumably that would lock in that offshore oil production for decades, likely beyond, you know, our 2045 carbon neutral goal in California. So, you know, Goleta and other coastal cities have recently passed resolutions against offshore oil and calling for a phase out of existing offshore oil. So any advice that you have on how we can not lock in that continued offshore oil production that Exxon's currently seems to be planning on doing, if we have any state laws that we brought to bear, if you have any influence, just wanted to bring up that issue, that that's something that a lot of us are concerned about. So thank you.
We appreciate that, and thank you for bringing that to our attention. We have been following all of that carefully. We've been very active in the current federal administration's plans for federal waters, commenting on that and expressing our concerns about that. And we will continue to monitor what's going on with Plains and the repair of the pipeline and how that interacts with the whole energy system. So we can't commit. We're actually not the state lands commissioners here. We're just staff. But I appreciate you bringing that up, and we will talk to our commissioners and continue to monitor that. So thank you.
Do the state land commissioners have a say in that at all?
No. Not very much. We don't have direct jurisdictional authority. But at the same time, our commission is made up of the Lieutenant Governor, the State Controller, and the Director of Finance. So two of those are statewide elected officials. You can assign the influence factor, accordingly to that. And both in, I think, individually as constitutional officers, they have strong feelings about that. And as a commission, we have passed many, many resolutions dealing with offshore oil and gas operations. And so we'll continue along those lines. That's all the names I have on our list. Are there any other questions or comments? I think this is like the fastest town hall meeting we've ever had.
Question from the seats.
Yeah, you don't have to come up or and what.
Oh,
no.
Fair enough.
Please.
I didn't submit a speaker slip.
You don't have to. That's okay.
Maybe if I missed it. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I missed it, but Bill Sheeler, who's going to pay for the decommissioning and cleanup of the EOF?
That's a
big question mark right now. We don't have an answer to that. Ultimately, we, as the State Lands Commission, have committed to continuing to operate and maintain that facility through the plugging and abandonment in order to make all of those facilities safe and ensure the safe termination, essentially, of the wells. What ultimately happens to the land underlying the EOF and the infrastructure associated with that, that is a question mark. The State Lands Commission doesn't own the land. We don't have regulatory jurisdiction necessarily over that facility. But we have taken the position in negotiations that we would like to acquire it. So, we'll have to see how things work out in the litigation that we're currently involved in. So it's a question mark at this time.
Is anybody else interested in acquiring it?
We haven't heard of anybody else.
No.
There's some significant cleanup work that has to be done, remediation work.
Yeah.
Has to be done out there.
That's been sort of the biggest issue at this point, is that the value or the cost of the cleanup relative to the value of the property is so upside down that it just doesn't really make sense from a traditional investment perspective. But to Jennifer's point, depending on what happens with the trustee, with Vinico, based on the offers we've made, if the State Lands Commission were to acquire the ownership, we would be cleaning it up. That was sort of our goal initially. So that's sort of where we are with it. But as long as Vinico decides to hold this out through the trust, they own the fee, they own the underlying land itself, and they get to make those decisions. And of course, at this point, that trust is judgment-proof. Everything's going to go to creditors. So it would likely, potentially from that point, sit as unclaimed property as the remaining assets of the estate were cleaned out in the bankruptcy, and then would eventually become go through a process under the unclaimed property statutes in California and would escheat back to the state of California at some point in the future. So kind of an odd duck where it would be without any direct ownership for a short period of time until some procedural elements happen, and then it would fall into the unclaimed property category. So
thank you.
If there isn't any, we're around, so
yes.
If you have a question you want to ask us individually, please do so. Otherwise, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.